Coming up on KUCB News, the Postal Service says it isn't trying to close an Alaska's branch, and bee season fishing is getting underway. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Monday, June 11th, 2018. The Unalaska Post Office has had reduced service for months, but officials say that's due to staffing shortages, not an attempt to shutter the branch. Don Peppinger is a marketing manager for the U.S. Postal Service.
No, there is nothing in the works for closing a post office. In Dutch Harbor, Unalaska area, there is no plans for that.
Currently, the Unalaska Post Office is open for package pickup on weekdays from noon until 4 o'clock. Counter service also reopened recently so patrons can buy stamps. But the branch has experienced inconsistent service since last summer. First, the post office lost Saturday service, then package and counter hours were reduced. There were even some days when the post office did not open. Mayor Frank Kelty says that's a fraction of the service available at the island's other post office.
On the Dutch Harbor side, or the 99692, they have 6 days a week service. They have 4 hours on Saturday, and they have at least 3 to 4 employees on that side.
Kelty says he has received numerous complaints from many community members, and he shared their feedback with the Postal Service.
What bothers me about this is the majority of the residential customers, the school, the clinic, City Hall, are all on the Unalaska side. And I think that should be given some extra weight.
But Peppinger says the reason Unalaska has fewer hours is because it gets less traffic.
There's more revenue going through the Dutch Harbor Post Office, and that makes sense. You look at where it's located. It's in the business area. You've got the store right next door. You've got the airport right next door. And so the Postal Service wants to support, operation-wise, where the need is.
Still, Peppinger says the organization is working to hire more staff for the Unalaska branch. She says a new candidate is already moving through the hiring process, and the Postal Service is hoping to fill another clerk position as well. Asked why it's taken so long to hire, Peppinger says it's hard to attract good candidates in Unalaska, in part because of the remoteness, cost of living, and limited housing options. Once someone is hired, she says it'll take a few weeks of training before they're ready to work. At this point, there is no timeline for when the Unalaska Post Office will return to regular hours. Bering Sea fishermen are now trawling for one of Alaska's most profitable catches. Pollock bee season opened yesterday with a total quota of almost 732,000 metric tons. That's about 1% higher than last year, according to Krista Milani of the National Marine Fisheries Service.
It's a very small difference, so I don't know that it necessarily means that there's a big upward trend, but it at least indicates that there's a healthy stock.
Milani says pollock biomass has been up in recent years, helping the species to maintain its status as the cornerstone commercial fishery in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands.
Pollock's been one of our most sustainable fisheries in Alaska, for sure. Well, probably one of the most sustainable fisheries in the country.
Last year, pollock accounted for the bulk of Dutch Harbor seafood landings, valued at $198 million in total. This bee season closes on November 1st by regulation. Processors will use the harvest for fillets and surimi, as opposed to the A season's focus on pollock roe. Meanwhile, a fishing company is appealing its ongoing tax dispute in court. As KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports, at stake is a major revenue source for Alaska's fishing communities, including Unalaska.
Fishing vessels offload millions of pounds of seafood each year in Alaska. The state taxes the catch's value and shares half with local ports. Fisherman's Finest, Inc., a Kirkland, Washington-based owner of a pair of factory trawlers, had challenged the constitutionality of the fisheries landing tax in an administrative case. Elected officials in Alaska fishing towns drew a sigh of relief after the state prevailed in the case.
It certainly is, vindication for coastal communities that share in that tax. It's very important.
Frank Kelty is the mayor of Unalaska, which includes the port of Dutch Harbor, one of the largest seafood ports in the country.
Unalaska gets the lion's share of that tax because we have the only major port in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands. It's upwards to 4.5 to 5.5 million annually. So it is a major revenue source for the city.
The tax brought in about $9.9 million statewide last year. The fishing company is appealing. In papers filed last month in state superior court, the company's attorney repeated the same arguments it had made in its administrative challenge, that the fish landing tax violates two provisions of the U.S. Constitution that effectively bar coastal states, like Alaska, from imposing tariffs or duties on goods brought in and out of a state. The company declined comment. Its attorney, Leon Vance of Juneau, wrote in a short statement that the matter is now up for the courts to decide. State lawyers aren't saying much either. Attorney General's Office spokeswoman Corey Mills released a short statement that the state is pleased that the administrative hearing judge upheld the tax. She said her office hopes the Superior Court judge will do the same. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaskan Tara Sweeney's nomination to be Assistant Interior Secretary for Indian Affairs cleared a U.S. Senate committee last week with no opposition, though there may still be one hang-up. Senator Lisa Murkowski says the committee should listen to the many Alaskan Native and Native American groups that have written letters endorsing Sweeney.
We've got supportive groups, including NCAI, the United South and Eastern Tribes, many, many more. There's virtually no opposition from Indian country, and I think that that is important.
Sweeney was in limbo for months while the administration tried to figure out how to treat her status as a shareholder in an Alaska Native corporation. Democratic Senator Tom Udall of New Mexico says he's now satisfied.
I was glad to hear Ms. Sweeney commit to recuse herself from any matters, and I quote now, directly affecting or with respect to the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, end quote, including oil and gas development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
But Senator Maria Cantwell, a Democrat from Washington State, says she wants more clarification about possible exceptions to Sweeney's conflict of interest recusal.
I will be seeking in writing before a Senate vote whether she does plan to seek a waiver in the future. I'd like her to just answer yes or no in writing.
The Committee on Indian Affairs took a voice vote to advance Sweeney's nomination to the Senate floor. No word yet on when it will come before the full Senate. Celebration has ended in Juneau, but there was something special about the food contest at this year's Native Cultural Gathering. Along with the usual samples of seaweed, judges also tasted seal oil, which was rendered in communities throughout Southeast. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story.
The judges call this tasting the breakfast of champions. And they aren't kidding. They're snacking on nutritious jars of seal oil at 10 in the morning. Jody Mitchell dips her spoon into a jar the color of amber.
So I see you're going back for another bite of that one.
Yeah, I like this one.
I do too.
Mm. Floating on top of this oil is crackling, or crispy seal fat. She says it melts in the mouth.
You know, my mom used to love these the best. I remember her picking them out of the jar and eating them. You know, so it reminds me of her. She puts seal oil on everything.
Mitchell is keeping track of the tastings with points and notes, which she'll share with the other judges later. Some seal oil is heavy, others are light. It's created by simmering the fat over a low to medium heat, a delicate process that can impact the flavor. For Mitchell, a winning entry tastes like being transported home.
Just taking a bite of this reminds me of my grandparents and sitting around the table eating Native food with all of them, and that was the best. I mean, food's always best when you share it.
And Sea Alaska Heritage President Rosita Worrell says that's the reason seal oil was added to the competition this year. She'd like to see more people proudly enjoying their traditional foods. Unfortunately, she says it hasn't always felt welcome, especially at a time when Native people were forced to assimilate.
I will tell you, you know, that when we were growing up and going to school, people would make fun of us because of our food, and, you know, we became ashamed of it.
But she says seal oil is something to be celebrated. She likes to eat it with dry fish or potatoes. But as a girl, just 6 years old, taken to a federal boarding school in Haines, seal oil was nowhere to be found. She says all the kids were homesick for the flavor. So they gravitated towards something the boarding school had plenty of that tasted similar.
They would serve cod liver oil, for it was like a vitamin, and we would love it. And we would kind of circle back and get in the line so that we could have more of it.
Although boarding schools are a thing of the past, Whirl thinks the policies that discourage Native people from harvesting traditional foods are not. To hunt seal, a person has to have a certain percent of Native blood, according to the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And it's becoming harder for the younger generations to meet that threshold. According to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, in the last decade, nearly 20,000 Alaska Native people had less than the federal requirement.
I went to a meeting and I heard a grandfather say, "I can't even take my grandson out to go hunting seal with me."
And Whirl says that means less seal, and seal oil is making it into people's homes for elders and future generations to enjoy. She'd like to see that change. In the meantime, she says including it in this year's food contest serves as a reminder. The taste for seal oil isn't going away.
So I think this is number one. Do you agree?
I can live with that.
Back at the judges' table, after discussing the nuances of all the different jars, the judges decide who they'll award first place. One judge says it's the seal oil she'd be most likely to crack open and share with family and friends. The winning entries came from Angoon, Metlakatla, and Cake. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.